Don Ledger joins us from the East Coast. He's a pilot. He's the NARCAP representative, NARCAP being the National Aviation Reporting Center on Aerial Phenomena, which is based in the United States. Don is the Canadian rep, an organization set up so that pilots and air traffic controllers and various people involved with aviation can report with impunity anything that they happen to come across in the skies that they can't explain. And we got into that a couple of weeks ago.
Did we ever?
And that segment of Program 320, Victor did a piece on converging evidence, pilots and air traffic controllers. And that segment is available online. And we have another clip that actually Wendy Connors sent us from the Robert Gribble database. Don Ledger joins us from his home outside of Halifax, Nova Scotia. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Errol.
You have been exchanging email with a gentleman I shall call The Norm. And The Norm sends me all kinds of good stuff on a regular basis. And I know he's expanded in your direction. And you had had a discussion with him via email.
Well, we talked about a couple of things. That picture of the three UFOs over Denver Airport. I think we touched on this before, but they take a picture of something. And they're not particularly looking for UFOs. It's just a photograph. And after the fact, when they either develop it or look at it on their computer monitor, if it's a digital picture, they see a UFO in the picture, in this case, three. It's my thinking that usually what happens is the shutter speed of the camera is getting an image of something that's traveling very fast through the air that you wouldn't normally see with the naked eye. Whatever that is, the naked eye, you know, I've never seen one dressed, but... and that could be the case in this one. When I look at it, there's three objects in the sky over Denver Airport. It's difficult to tell, as usual, with all of these photographs as to what the altitude would be. If I was standing there on the ground and these things were over the airfield, I'd be able to identify the aircraft very easily. I could tell you, you know, if they were the three identical aircraft. I could tell you if it was a 737 with the old jet engine or the new jet engines or whatever. They're that close. These things are slightly blurry. They're not an artifact of the camera. That would be too much of a coincidence for that to happen. They do have that anomalous shape to them that makes them look as if they're slightly, dare I say, saucer-shaped. Mm-hmm. Someone's got to come up with another word for that. There again, they have associated almost like a slight haziness at one end of these things, which I think if could be something to do with the motivating force that's driving these things. They call it the engine or the drive or the space drive or whatever.
Propulsion system?
The propulsion system.
There you go.
For the lack of another one, sans propellers. The thing is moving so fast that when you do trap it, you trap it in an instant in time. You're getting, you know, maybe the leading edge of the thing coming at you is slightly more in focus than the part behind. They're moving that fast. You remember the one in Australia?
And yes.
It escapes me now, the name of that thing.
Over the railroad crossing.
Yeah, that thing, we argued about it, must have been 2 or 3 weeks, about whether it was a beetle caught in flight or a bug or something. To me, that looks like a solid ellipsoidal object moving at high speed, and he just happened to catch it when he was taking a picture of the railroad crossing. Mm-hmm. He worked for the Department of Highways.
Don Ledger is with us. If you want to go and take a look at these pictures that we're talking about, the three objects over Denver Airport on the 26th of November, go to tonight's program listing, the news and information section there. The first link will take you to those images. Something that struck me, Don Ledger, when I saw these images was, hey, if these were aircraft, regular commercial aircraft, they wouldn't be circling the airport in quite the close proximity that these things are to each other in the photograph.
Aircraft that are coming in or leaving, they're not circling over the airfield. They're way out in the...
burbs.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're in holding pattern, if that happens. Denver's not the busiest airport in the United States, but it's one of those corridor airports where flights can really pick up in a hurry at certain times of the day. So there's two or three things to think about here. Say I'm right in that these things are motoring through there at such a speed that the only way you happen to see them when they're moving is if you stop them with shutter action and catch them in a picture. Any conventional aircraft would have to be probably doing something like Mach 10, which is probably damn near impossible, that close to the surface of the Earth. The air is so thick down that low, and I'm assuming these things are low. They look to me like they're no more than about 1,000 feet to 1,500 feet up, but they might be more than that. They might be a little further away. But if they're tearing across, coming through the airspace, in order to travel fast enough that you'd need a shutter speed of 200, say, or maybe 500, it could have been 2,000, we don't know. It was during the daylight to take this picture. Any kind of a conventional aircraft doing that would take out every eardrum and paint a plate of glass, and the line of flight of that aircraft coming through would be just devastation all the way along there. Its sonic blast would be terrific.
And Don, wouldn't craft moving at that speed, not only would it break the sound barrier continuously, you know, you're talking about, you know, Mach 10 or whatever that, that speed happens to be, and with the density of the air, wouldn't that just burn up?
Well, this is it. It would be burn up, be red hot, that's for sure. Never mind the sonic wave. The shock wave coming off the aircraft would reach the ground as a sonic wave, but as a pressure wave, too, if they're that low. There'd be a heck of a rooster tail following behind these things as they were going through, and it would probably be ripping up real estate as it went. Having said that, here they are in a busy control zone. I'm certain that this place is probably a lot busier than Halifax International, and probably about the same amount of business going on there as would, say, happen in Toronto. Pretty much all times during the day, you've got aircraft coming through there. I know their traffic tends to back up and stack up at certain times of the day, more so than where it's sort of spread out evenly over Toronto.
Was there any word, Don, about any radar at all?
I didn't have that detail myself, and I started with our friend out there who sends these things in. The only thing I got at that point was a picture, and there wasn't too much detail involved there.
By the way, Victor surfed. He Googled UFO Australia Railway, and he came up with the City of Whittlesey website.
That's what I thought it was, Whittlesey.
Whittlesey, which is just outside Melbourne. And, it looks like one of the North American railroad crossings, and above the right-hand pair of lights that are flashing is this thing that definitely looks like a metallic disc.
Very similar altitude, eh, Errol? Very similar altitude.
Yeah, it's not very high up. And one of the other things, too, is if you'll notice that the lights that are flashing on the railway crossing, you can actually see where one set of lights is fading out and the others are coming in. That's how fast this happened. I think the shutter speed of that particular camera was something like 206 or 207 one-hundredths of a second, and it stopped this thing, whatever it was, in the air. And the back end of it, as you notice, is fuzzy. I'm going by memory here, and I don't have it up.
On the Whittlesey one?
Yeah.
That particular one looks a little bit more, for lack of a better word, not quite as luminous as the ones in the Denver.
Not quite as bright.
Not quite as bright.
It looks to me like a metallic leading edge. Now, somebody's saying that might be some kind of flying beetle that's close to the lens. I don't see it myself, but that's the maddening thing about these. You know, there's always the possibility that it is something else. But my gut feeling on that one in Whittlesey is that it's solid and it was motoring.
Yeah. Did anybody send Bruce McAbee a copy of that so he could take a look at it?
Yeah, and he came up with the same, could be or couldn't be. Might be or might not be. That's about as far as he could take it himself.
Yeah,
there's just not enough information there.
Bruce McAbee, a photo analyst. Since we're talking about airports, I think you know that Wendy Connors inherited the Robert Gribble collection from Seattle, Washington. Bob Gribble was the man who set up the organization that became the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. He recorded almost every phone call that he got and cataloged it and wrote up the reports by hand for a long time. And Wendy inherited all of his archives. And Wendy Connors' Faded Discs has been going through a lot of the audio that she's gotten from Bob Gribble. This is an interesting, and I want to play you this because this sort of ties in really quite nicely. This was a call that Bob Gribble got on the December 13th, 1981. Let's lay that down the pipe now.
I work at the Oakland Herald Traffic Control Center.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and we observed an unknown phenomenon this morning, about 1600 Zulu. And local time, that was about 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And we observed it for about 10 to 15 minutes. Two targets. And we were working in conjunction with Air Defense Command.
Yes.
They also painted the targets on their radar. We checked two radar systems in our facility. The targets were approximately 200 miles west of San Francisco over the water. They stayed in close proximity to each other. Correction, let me rephrase that. They flew in what appeared to be unison, approximately 90 miles apart, in a north-south track. We observed them initially tracking south. Their speed was in excess of 2,000 knots. They did a high-speed run for about 75 miles, made a very abrupt slowdown, and then a 180-degree turn and tracked back northbound in excess of 2,000 knots. Made about a 15 to 20-degree right turn, and then we lost them. advised me that the targets were too high to get an altitude readout on, and they confirmed their speed in excess of 1,857 miles an hour also.
Okay. Any estimate of altitude?
Their altitude readout capabilities, I think, are classified.
I see.
And they were reluctant to advise us what the altitude was. But
okay.
I do know that they were in excess of 60,000 feet.
Okay. Were you getting a good, strong return?
Oh, good. Painted like a barn out there. And it was a good, strong track, like we were painting a 747 on primary target within 50 miles of the antenna site. It was really a fantastic situation. And several radar systems, we were receiving them off of two conjunctive radar sites that we work with. The 26th NORAD was receiving targets on them, and the 25th NORAD was also receiving targets on them. So there was no radar phenomenon involved, unless it was something so unique that it would affect all radar systems.
When they left to the north, did they just go off of the screen?
They just went off of the screen.
Okay.
It was almost like, they went to such an excessively high speed and rate of climb that one moment the antenna picked them up, and the next sweep of the antenna, there was nothing there to hit.
Amazing. Painted like a barn.
Yeah.
Thanks to Wendy Connors for supplying us with that clip. That was from December 13th, 1981.
Mm-hmm. You got to love these guys that break ranks and come out and give you this stuff. When did Reagan fire all the air traffic controllers? It's in the 80s sometimes, because
uh-huh.
You had Bush, and then you had Clinton, and then you had...
Right.
So, and then you had Bush.
Yeah.
No, listen, that's fantastic stuff, that. And you know right off when this guy's talking to you that somebody said that was a jet that went down there. How long did he say he had it on for, like 15, 20 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
15 to 20 minutes and afterburners on any jet in the world, you're not going to get over 10 minutes of flight time out of the damn thing. Well, 15 maybe. And then the thing is heading for the ground because it's got no fuel left. I mean, that's, you know, you can't, up until they brought out the F-22, and it can motor,
mm-hmm.
you know, for quite a while, but not back in 1981. The only way you were going to get the Mach 2 was to go into afterburners and get there, and then when you're going in afterburners, you're using a 30 or fuel up right off the bat just to do it. I mean, you're pouring raw fuel right in the back end of that thing, and you burn up your fuel pretty quick. So, I mean, for these things to be doing that speed going down and then going back for 15 minutes, we'd almost have to be an air refueling tanker to do something like that, and they can't travel any faster than about 450 knots, you know. So
Dean Goilandi out here in Master tells me that Reagan fired the air traffic controllers in August 81.
Kind of a coincidence. I don't know why that popped into my head, but I know he did fire, but I don't think that was the reason. It was because they were going on strike. I'm going to have to get down that way sometime and see what else Wendy's got down there.
Oh, yeah. She has a staggering amount of stuff. That's what she does basically from dawn till dusk, is she sits down at her computer and dumps in all of these recordings, some of them on wire, some of them on reel-to-reel,
yeah.
Some of them on cassette, some of them off transcription discs. It's amazing the stuff that people are sending her.
Well, somebody has to get control of this stuff before it gets lost. I admire her for being able to take all of that stuff and keep it under control and
mm-hmm.
know where everything is, because I don't know. The woman must have a place the size of a hockey arena or something like that. Because my house down here, you know, I built a big office in here, and I'm running out of space already. And I've got what I would consider a modest amount of documents and books and so on and so forth.
Is there anything else that we need to touch on, Don?
No, not I think I'm past my time now anyway.
Yeah, well, no, actually we had planned to sort of run you up to the three-quarter mark, so we're just about there now.
Yeah, well, it always flies by really fast.
It just blows by, doesn't
it? Have I got
it?
Time to say Merry Christmas to everybody there, or a happy holiday season? Or
hell no.
Because I probably won't be talking to you before Christmas now.
No.
A couple weeks away.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas, Don.
And you too, Victor.
Thank you, Don.
You and your family, and a happy and prosperous new year.
Oh, thanks.
Good night, Don.
Good night.